The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, as always, text to 51551 or you can email to ray@rte.ie. You know you've had a good holiday when you can't remember your password. That's So I arrived into the office yesterday morning and for the life of me, couldn't remember the password for the computer. And I tried all sorts of variations of things that I'd gone through over the years, children's names, former addresses, all that sort of thing, with numbers at the end. Nothing worked. So eventually I had to give in and you have to log a ticket here and somebody from IT gives you a ring and then they sort it out for you. And then I went to put in a new password and the computers got more fussy because I was putting in passwords, as I would have in the past. First letter, capital, last two things, numbers, and it wouldn't allow me to use those passwords. It was saying it was too lame. Lame wasn't the word I'd use, but inefficient or cryptology or something like that. So eventually I've worked it out. I'll never remember it, so I had to write it down and then somebody's going to see it and they'll be, not that there's anything to see on my computer, but there you go. So, you know, there's a measure of a good holiday. If you can't remember the password for your computer when you come back to work, if there's any other measures of a good holiday, do let me know. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And how do you extend the holiday feeling? Because you know people say that, oh yeah, it's lovely, I feel refreshed and rejuvenated. And then come Tuesday, oh, the holiday is a distant memory. How do you keep the memory of the holiday alive to keep you energised when you get back to work? Any tips? I arrived back and there was a package on the desk from Declan. Declan from Boreham County, Offaly, and a little postcard with handwritten note on it. He says, I was at your show last Tuesday, so that'll tell you how long it was, at the Marina in Banagher. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Anyway, I thought you might like this book about Offaly. We don't have the high profile of places like Dublin, Cork and Galway and others, but it's still an interesting place to live in, says Declan. Thanks for that, Declan. And the book is a lovely book. It says, Did You Know 100 Quirky Facts About County Offaly? As it happens, we took a break from the main holiday. We had a mini little holiday on the River Shannon while we were away. And we started off in Banagher. That beats Banagher. And we travelled up to beyond Athlone and then back down to Athlone. And we spent a night and a day in Athlone and then back down to Banagher. And it was wonderful. It was a great adventure for the family. And when you come around the corner and you see Clonmacnoise, you know, the 6th century monastic settlement, you go, wow, because it's like they would have seen it, because there's no sense of modernity around it. Okay, you might see the interpretive centre there, but in the main, there's no sense of modernity. There's just the fields and the cows and the river and you. And if you can turn off the engine on the boat, you could be like you were approaching it, you know, what, 1300 years ago. Anyway, there's great information in the book about Clonmacnoise. Seemingly there's a pilgrim's road to it, which was used by pilgrims after St. Ciarán died and his tomb was there and they visited his tomb. And there's an ancient pilgrim's road that leads to Clonmacnoise. And there's a lovely, we didn't encounter it when we were on the Shannon, but there's a lovely lockkeeper's house there, Boland's lockkeeper's house, which is on the Grand Canal near Tullamore, and was built in 1800. And it's an oval-shaped house and it's an amazing-looking thing. We must get to visit that. And there's loads of interesting quirky facts, 100 and all, about Offaly. So thanks. Thanks so much. Thanks for sending that in to me, Declan. You'd know this as well from holidays, that just being outside, isn't that the thing? Just being outside is good for you. And that's why I envy people who work outside. We have to come into a smelly office, then come down into the dungeon of the studio. And look, I'm not giving out at all. I love what I do and I'm very lucky. But I do envy sometimes people who work in the outdoors. And they've done a study now, the British Ecological Society, and they say that visiting a park can lift a person's mood as much as the arrival of Christmas. It's not only one though. Other studies have found that being outside, hearing birdsong and seeing trees leads to better mental well-being. Being in nature can lower blood pressure, reduce stress and even make people less selfish. The study looked at the language used in people's tweets when they were in a park and found that they were happier than tweets sent on Christmas Day. Isn't that mad? Just been out and about. We're not meant to be in offices, sitting down, looking at computers, trying to remember passwords that you've forgotten. That's not the way. We're not built for that. And we haven't evolved yet to cope with all that stuff. Isn't that the case? I've read this in loads of books now, and everybody accepts that our big brains have allowed us to change our environment more than any other species. And our bodies haven't caught up with our environments. Do you know what I mean? So now we lead a very sedentary lifestyle. We can get a motor car, a motorised vehicle to go from A to B, whereas before our ancestors would have had to run, walk, cycle or whatever. And then we're eating food that we're not meant to eat because we're getting berries from across Europe. Back in the day, our ancestors would have had to eat whatever was available to them. This time of the year, it would have been gooseberries and blackberries, and apples are coming into season now, and strawberries just out of season. So we haven't evolved. Our bodies haven't evolved to catch up with the way we've changed our environment. Anyway, get out there when you can. Get out there when you can. I read a piece by Susanna Constantine. Now, you'll know that name because she was one half of Trini and Susanna, What Not to Wear. Remember them? They were huge at the time. They were huge. They were brash, sort of loud-mouthed, sort of nearly aristocratic. Not aristocratic, but they were definitely from a certain type of background. And they had that show, What Not to Wear, Trini and Susanna. Anyway, she wrote a piece for the Mail today about teenage parties. And there's some good tips there. She has an 18-year-old called Esme. I suppose, I don't know, but I haven't sort of encountered this yet. It's all ahead of me. But maybe there are parties to sort of signal, celebrate, signpost the end of the summer holidays. And maybe there are people now listening who are planning or been pestered into having a party for their teenagers. Well, some good advice in the Daily Mail today from Susanna Constantine. She was on Strictly Come Dancing as well. Be there, which is blindingly obvious. Be there in the house. I don't know if you'll get many takers to come to a party where parents are there, but she says, be there. Enlist some spies. So if you have older nieces, nephews that you can trust, you know, invite them and have them going around and monitoring behaviour, situation. Keep them out. If you can at all, keep them out of the house. Keep them in the garden. Even hire a gazebo. And just monitor the guest lists, because seemingly when you put up a party online, it can grow and grow and grow. And she says, allow for a 50 to 100% increase on any limit you set. And then there's other things as well. And another, a very practical one is fill stomachs, because if there's booze involved, and there will be if they're over 18, that they're unlikely, less likely to get dangerously drunk if they're on a full stomach of pizza or burgers or hot dogs or whatever. So that's there. And all that stress around teenagers, and there's another sort of related article in the papers today. Kids make you happier. Yay! There you go. Kids make you happier when they're gone. that's what it says. The University of Heidelberg in Germany looked at 55,000 people aged 50 and older and found that those with grown-up children living away from the family home had a better quality of life. So you suffer through parenting while they're still at home, and then when they're gone, you have a better quality of life. I suppose it's the social interaction, and then they're coming back, and grandchildren and all that. That enhances your life. What do you think about that? You know, that does life improve when you've got rid of them? It's increasingly difficult to get rid of them. I know that sounds mean, get rid of them. But even talking to Mark Cagney yesterday, he has four children still living at home and no sign of any of them leaving. And that's the story all over the country, particularly in Dublin. I see where the average rent now in Dublin is over €2,000. Now, what are you going to do if you're facing into your first job in your early 20s? Are you going to pay €2,000 rent or stay in the family home with all your stuff around you? I know what I do. I'm sort of sound light about it, but it's a serious issue which has to be tackled by somebody in charge. They don't seem to be doing that. 51551 ray@rte.ie. The Irish Sun today, this'll interest you, because they've looked at the breakdown of our spending habits according to an AIB app, and they go through the whole thing. For example, on average, Irish people spend about €100 a month on takeaways and dining out. We were trying to establish if you eat in your work canteen, is that eating out? I would say no. The Trades Description Act would be on to you if you said you were eating out in the RT canteen. No, it's lovely and everything, and I eat there every day, but you wouldn't call it eating out. That is something you do in a restaurant and something you look forward to. Anyway, 100 euro on takeaways and dining out. And we know we're a very charitable nation, but they have details on which county is the most charitable, and County Clare comes out on top. County Clare spend on average 6.64, that's €6.64 on their chosen charity per month. Monaghan comes out as the least charitable county in Ireland, €4.32, and Donegal is only a cent ahead of Monaghan, mind you, €4.33. So there you have it there. Do you know what I did today, which I rarely do? I looked at the TV listings. I don't know why I did. I never look at the TV listings. And there it is at 9.35 tonight. It is the New Year special of Mrs. Brown's Boys. The New Year special of Mrs. Brown's Boys is on tonight. On the, what is it? The 20th of August, is it? 20th of August, New Year special. There you go. Maybe it was a typo. I doubt it very much, though. Now, what are you saying on 5 on 551? I once came back from a holiday, and you know it was good when I forgot where I lived. That's Martin. A good holiday. Forgetting the names of your colleagues when you return, says Finbar and Cork. Forgetting your passwords is the sign of old age. Nothing to do with your holiday. If there's a song that you listen to on your holiday, or will always remind you of a place, then take a moment out from work or while you're on a run and escape back to that place. Works for me, says Keith. Good advice, Keith. Thanks for that. And do you remember years ago when you'd go on holidays and take about 10 rolls of film? You get home, pop them into Spectre Photo or somewhere like that, and then relive the holidays that night with your friends, laughing your socks off at those situations you had totally forgotten about at the start of the holidays. That used to be a great way of getting the holiday feeling back. That's now gone. Yeah, and then people have seen the pictures on social media before you get back, and you go to tell them about a lovely scene with a seal and a cove, and oh yeah, I saw that on Instagram, saw that on Snapchat, whatever they've seen it on. All right. And then there's that pregnant pause because you've nothing to talk about. In relation to the password, they call that the ageing process. I'm in late 40s and I sometimes have the same problems as Mary in Dunboyne. I will not take that. I don't accept it. It was a good holiday. I was off for 3 weeks and my mind was elsewhere. That's why I forgot the password. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. That's the very talented Freya Ridings and Castles. We had her on the TV show earlier in the year, and she was just her on a grand piano. Amazing, amazing voice and amazing presence. That's Castles, as I say. 5 on 5 on RadioRT.ie. That the Christmas special of Mrs. Brown's last week. The world's gone mad. So that person.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 5 on 5 on RadioRT.ie. We're joined in Studio 10 by Claudine Keane Nee Palmer. Isn't
yes,
that what they say down the country?
It, right.
Yes, yeah. So what happened with the passport? So you had Palmer.
So yeah, I kept my passport under my maiden name, Palmer, and I was very reluctant to give it up. But after a few last minute calls, which was, can the Keane and Palmer family please come to the front? My husband was like, that's it. You're officially changing your passport. And we agreed to disagree. But anyway, I did change it in the end. Reluctantly.
So Robbie insisted, or was
yeah,
it just awkward?
He was
awkward?
Like, come on, you know, you're keen now.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And was it, I can never remember which goes first if you have the double bar name.
Usually the maiden name, I think, goes first.
Goes first, yes.
Well, that's it.
So you'd be Claudine Palmer Keane.
Yeah.
That's a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It does have it. Yeah. And it sounds very, I think it sounds nice to have a double bar name. It's very interesting.
Yeah. And what do you do then when two people with double bird names get married? What happens then?
I know. The name just goes on forever, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Great to see you.
Thank you for having me.
You were in before as well because you're an ambassador for Spar Better Choices.
I am, yeah.
And you've two boys.
Two boys.
What age are they
on
now?
The go. So Robert's 10 and Hudson's 3. And
right.
Full of energy, like it's a madhouse.
Yeah.
Balls all over the place, toys all over the place.
Do they understand what's happening? Because you move so much.
So much.
You were in the States for how long?
We're in the States for 6 years in Los Angeles and got back to Ireland about a year ago. And obviously Rob has taken on the role with the Irish national team, but also Middlesbrough. So now we're on the go kind of again between Middlesbrough and Ireland.
How is that working out? What are you doing?
It's grand. You know, like many things that happen to us, it happens on like a Tuesday and we're gone on a Thursday. It's really no thinking behind it, just have to go with the flow. And we're kind of figuring it out day by day, but really enjoying it. Robert's in the academy, my son, in Middlesbrough. He's playing against Sunderland today, so good luck to him. And yeah, the kids are loving it. I think they really embrace it.
Where are they going to school? Where will they go to school in September?
So we'll come back in September to Dublin, right. Malahide, where I'm from. We bought a house there several years ago, so we'll come back there for school. And I suppose we'll take it as it comes, because it, as I said, this all happened so last minute. There wasn't really time to prepare different schools or change. And
So Robbie got the job in June in Middlesbrough.
June, exactly.
Yeah.
And so obviously, you know, just with everything happening so quickly and the big change already from coming back to America, I didn't think it was fair to just up and go again. So we're going to commute.
So you're going to commute or Robbie's going to commute?
We'll both, because he'll be coming back for the national team.
Yeah.
And we'll be going over for all the games and for the weekends, holidays off and days. So we'll make it work for this year and then figure it out for next year what the plan is going forward, I think.
Yeah. What do you call those things that you, because I don't get them, the air club points or whatever.
The mileage, like the air miles. I've got some good miles. Yes. I do. I absolutely do. Especially for the long haul flights, all the LA and New York flights and stuff. Yeah. So we've collected them.
So the boys, what do you say to the boys? You know, Daddy has a new job. Is that the way it goes?
I try not to get too serious about it with, like, Robert, because he's at that age, like 10, where he's got friends and he's settled now in Ireland. He likes his school. He's got teammates on his football team. So I just was like, you know, we're going to go back and forth and would you try it out for a little while? I don't get too serious with him. And he tends to adapt very quickly to things. He's quite a social guy. And I think he's traveled so much that he's used to getting up and going. But he's very good with it.
Yeah.
But I don't shock them into anything. I just gradually.
So he's playing soccer at Middlesbrough at the moment.
Yeah, in the academy. Yeah.
And back home in Ireland, is he playing any?
He does. He plays for Malahide United in Ireland.
And
yeah.
Does he play any GAA?
He does. He plays for St. Sylvester's. My brother played on the Dublin minor team. So my brother brings him up all the time. He's always playing Gaelic with his uncle, Ronan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he loves
Ronan
it.
Ronan got married recently,
didn't
he?
He did. Yeah, he got married in Adair Manor about 2 weeks ago now. So it was fabulous. Such a lovely week.
You
we're
looked
so
amazing.
Oh, no. Thank you so much.
That must have been a big deal picking out a dress for that, was it?
Well, I was a bridesmaid, so my job was a little bit easier.
You
I let
have
Zoe,
a choice,
his wife, yes. pick out, and I said, pick whatever you're picking out, Zoe, I'll get into. So she's a great girl. So I was delighted with the dress and everything else. And they had such a lovely day. It was really nice.
Yeah. And it was great for you, probably just not to be the centre of attention, maybe, was it?
Well, she is such a stunning girl. She had a fabulous wedding dress on, and they're so in love, so no one was ever going to shine their parade, but they really had such a fabulous day, and they've been together for 11 years, so it was about time he got married.
So Ronan used to play for the Dublin Minders, so he's taken little Robert under his wing.
Absolutely. And my dad's a Kerry man, so you can just imagine my house. It's
the madness of it all.
They're like,
and is he showing a talent? Obviously, if
he's very good.
The
I think when you play, you know, football, you mean for Gaelic or both?
Both.
Well, Gaelic, I think the soccer's really stood to him, the movement and the movement his dad has taught him, especially around the box and things like that. But with the academy, he scored a hat-trick last week. As I mentioned, he's playing against Sunderland today. They won the cup on Saturday, his team against the Diffin Academy. So they're doing well. They're only 10. It's a bit of fun and there shouldn't be any pressure at that age.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
But there will be pressure, won't there? That's going to be difficult for you as a parent to manage, you and Robbie, because Robbie is such an iconic figure in football, and now he's going into management.
Yeah.
His name is always going to be there, and you know, he shares the same name.
I know. I think for us, what we try and do is, obviously Robert loves playing the guitar. He loves playing Gaelic, as I said. He's got so many other interests, which I think is really important, because you just have to grow as a person. You can't just be obsessed with one thing and not develop and make friends and be social in other areas. So he's all round enjoying music and everything else. But there obviously is a pressure. He said to me the other day, "Mom, will you please tell my dad to stop whistling on the sideline? He distracts me terribly during the game." And you know, I'm like, poor child.
So that's what Robbie
He whistles at him
to
get his attention, or to you know, he wouldn't speak to you. He wouldn't interfere with a game. But yeah, he might.
And then he waves him.
Whistle and wave. Really do that, should he? But
I don't know.
I think he does. Yeah, he's kind of half like, you know, coaching him around the place.
Yeah.
But he enjoys it.
And obviously Robbie has ambitions in coaching. You've obviously chatted about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's going in the right direction.
He's going in the right direction.
Assistant in Ireland, assistant in Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Do you have, you know, the chats? Do you go, should I take this job? Will he ask?
No, we do. We do have the chats. I mean, I would never ever hold him back from anything. There's never been a time where I've said, don't do this. I mean, there's been a little bit of a time with Liverpool where I was like, maybe you could stay a little bit longer, but he wants to play and that's all he wants to do. And if it was any other way, he wouldn't just sit around. He's not happy to just, you know, collect a wage or whatever.
Yes,
he needs,
yeah.
He's so passionate. It's what he loves. So I've always supported it. And I know he knows what he's talking about. This is his deal. You know, He gets the industry and he knows he has to keep moving, to keep progressing and stuff. But I always support that.
I was thinking about last night, management is probably more pressurised than playing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because you bring it home, don't you?
You do bring it home, and it's obviously you can do so much with a club. Like, it's up to the chairman who they buy, and it's a business. And sometimes they mightn't be able to buy the players that you may want at the time. So obviously there's many elements to managing and to...
Whereas you just go out and you play,
you score a goal. If you've got the talent, you're going to show it, and it's up to you. And it's very kind of like, even though it's a group sport, you're in control of yourself, but you're not really as such in control of other people. You can push them in the right direction, but they do what they do, you know.
Yeah. So they have loads of offers on at the moment, and they're encouraging, obviously, children to eat more healthily, and they're encouraging parents to buy fresh fruit and all that. So they've all offers on.
They have loads of offers on up until the 4th of September. There's loads of back to school offers, and they have some vouchers to give away. That's all on spar.ie. Well, I'm very passionate about it because my kids, I try and get them to eat healthy all the time, as much as you can with children. But I like the fact that it's convenient, but you're not letting the healthy side down. They have everything taken care of with dietary requirements, if it's gluten free or low fat. So they've really taken charge of things.
It's all covered.
It's all covered. Making life easy for all of us moms and dads.
I've been back home, near your family.
Yeah, it's great.
Is it?
Love it. I really do. I craved this for so long. Like, just to be, you know, I missed out a lot with my brother because there was a 5-year age gap between us, and I left Ireland when I was 21 after I finished university. I was actually just down the road in UCD. So I missed kind of bits and pieces from him. So I was so happy to be part of
the wedding
and the build up. I'm usually there the day before on the flight and miss everything.
No, because looking from the outside, you seem to have a very glamorous life in the States, hanging around with David Beckham and Victoria Beckham, and it's probably not that glamorous in Malahide.
Well, no, do you know what it is? That's our base, and we can travel from there. And we still, like, we were over in LA July. David Beckham got a statue unveiled at the LA Galaxy, and he'd asked Rob to come over and say a speech. They were very close while they were there, and they still are, but Rob did a 10-minute speech, and Dave was very moved by it. It actually looked like he might be shedding a tear and stuff, but it's always nice to get back, and I think it's a home away from home now as well. Yeah. So we go back quite a lot. So we get a bit of both, which is important, I think.
And what about you? What are your ambitions?
Well, I love being a mom first and foremost, and our lives are so hectic now at the moment. I never, like, even booking in this press day, I flew in last night and I'm flying out at 6 o'clock today.
Yeah.
So I'm going straight back to the airport. So even getting a time or a date is always busy for me. You know, it's tough for me. You can never plan ahead so much.
We're under strict instructions to have you out by 3:30.
Did you hear that?
It's 15:31 now.
We can work around that a little bit. Don't be worrying. Yeah.
Passenger key.
I know.
Make their way to the gate.
Where
57.
Yeah. Exactly.
No more Palmer. So if you were travelling on your own up to now, it would have been Palmer.
Yeah, and I loved it. I love the way you keep your little bit of yourself.
Yeah,
exactly. But I can understand from Rob's point of view. It was like, they're calling Keane and Palmer. You know, why can't you just do the Keane thing? And I did. Yeah.
Anyway. It's great to see you.
Thank you so much. It's always
in.
A pleasure.
Yeah,
you
must come in on the TV show. Seth and Robbie do your first
Will
TV
do.
Interview.
Absolutely.
She's winking at me there going, not a hope right now.
Oh my God.
Claudine, great to see you.
Thank
Thanks
you
for
so
coming
much, Ray.
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or ray@rte.ie. Now, down in our Limerick studio, we have Jennifer Purcell. How are you doing, Jennifer?
Good, Ray. How are you?
Good. Now, Jennifer moved over to London to follow her career in media. Thanks to the campaigner, the late Laura Brennan, who campaigned about cervical cancer, Jennifer was conscious of the dangers of cervical cancer and she booked a smear test as soon as she received a letter from the NHS ahead of her 25th birthday. And that was an important decision on your part, Jennifer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just some part of me felt like there was going to be something wrong. So I think I was quite conscious to get something booked in to see what was going on.
Okay. And that happens here as well, that on your 25th birthday, you get a letter to say you're now eligible for a smear test.
Yeah. So I think what happened with me was in the few months in the lead up to your 25th, they send you the letter with the NHS. So I think it was actually April, so I would have still been 24 when I got it done.
Okay, so you went in and did you have an inkling there was something up, or is that just with sort of hindsight?
No, I did. So I don't know what it was, to be honest, because I didn't have any symptoms or anything. So I had kind of been saying it to my sister, maybe going back a year or two even. And she was kind of saying to me, you'll be grand, like, you know, there's going to be nothing wrong. And I was saying it to my friends and I was like, I just have a feeling that there's going to be something. It was just kind of this gut feeling. And they were, of course, saying that I was just been a bit of a hypochondriac. Mm. And I just kind of I was thinking, no, I'm going to go in anyway as soon as I can, the minute I get a chance, and see what's going on. So I went in anyway and I had my smear. And my doctor was very reassuring and she said, you know, everything looks fine. She said, I've only ever been wrong once. So I kind of took away with that and didn't really think about it again then until they called.
To say what?
So they called to say that I had high-grade abnormal cells. So they're precancerous, essentially. And they, you know, they need to be treated or else they could potentially become cancerous. So I had to be booked in to get them removed. And I actually had the surgery for that on my 25th birthday.
Okay. And as well as getting them removed, do they do further tests on those as well?
Yeah, so you go in first for a colposcopy and they take biopsies then to confirm what it is that you have. So then after that, then I had the LETS treatment where they essentially remove the cells, but they also at the same time have to check to make sure that they've gotten everything. So yeah, essentially I was still kind of waiting to make sure everything was clear. And I didn't really think any more about it. You know, I just presumed that would be the end of it, and that I was treated and, you know, that would be that. But unfortunately, it wasn't.
And 2 weeks later, you got a phone call that nobody wants to get.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, everyone was kind of saying to me, if you'd anything to worry about, they'd call you within 2 weeks. And 10 days later, they rang. So I was at home. Well, I was in London, at home in the flat on my own, and the phone rang and she said, look, you need to come in tomorrow, we need to discuss a plan. So of course I just fell apart, and she said, you know, it's too late now to be sending any letters with the details, you just need to come in at 11 o'clock.
Okay. And what were you told when you went in?
So yeah, essentially I prepared myself for the worst and every possible outcome of what could potentially be wrong, but I knew it wasn't anything good. So the doctor basically said, look, you know, it's we found very early stages cancer. I don't think she used the word cancer, whatever the technical term was, of what it was that they found, and she said it's, you know, it's the earliest possible chance. So she said, you're very lucky that you got your smear test when you did, and you're very young. So she said, you know, be thankful that you came in when you did. So then handed me a few leaflets and information and a little booklet on how to deal with cervical cancer. So, yeah.
And how was it treated then, Jennifer?
Yeah, so essentially they have to discuss amongst a team what the best treatment plan for you is. And I think they were very cautious because of my age and me being so young. So I had a cone biopsy treatment done, which is essentially more or less the same kind of procedure as the first, but it's a bit more invasive. And she said to me, look, you know, at least with this, your chances of having kids are, you know, you should be totally fine. She said you'd be very unlucky not to be able to have kids. Mm. So I think if it was anything worse or had spread even, you know, a bit more, I'd be looking at a different outcome there. So so I was lucky with that.
When was that now? How long ago was that?
So I had surgery 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah. So it would have been just coming up on just over a month ago, really, that I found out. And they couldn't operate. They had to wait 6 weeks between the two procedures. So, yeah.
And what's the prognosis now?
So I'm waiting for results now. So they take a couple of weeks to come back. So I'm hoping that I'll get them this week, and please God, it'll be all clear. But I'm kind of in limbo at the minute, just waiting to see that everything was successful.
Yeah. You came to our attention because you wrote a piece for the Limerick Leader. You used to be a journalist with them, and that's your chosen career path. And because you're a journalist, I suppose, you were looking at things that were going on in this country when it came to cervical cancer and smear tests, etc. And you did a sort of a comparison, and you put yourself, I suppose, in the situation where what would have happened if you were back at home in Limerick and not in London. Talk us through that.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, one of the first things that my family said to me when we did find out what was going on was, aren't you lucky you're not here with everything going on? And I think, you know, I try to follow as much as I can, you know, from London of what's going on at home and stuff, and, you know, reading what I can in the media of what's happening. And I had initially kind of shared my story about the precancerous cells in a hope to just kind of say to women, you know, book your smear test, like get the smear test done, don't put it off. And I had an influx of women messaging me saying, you know, I'm waiting 6 months, I'm waiting 8 months, I'm waiting for this treatment and that treatment, and I'm ringing my GP all the time. And, you know, just so many people sharing their stories saying the issues that they've faced with the system here. So I think I was kind of in a way looking at them saying, oh my God, aren't I lucky? Mm. You know, I mean, I can't predict what way I could have, you know, flown through it. I don't know. But I suppose they were so fast to treat me and look after me through the NHS that I'm just kind of grateful for that. And I don't know what kind of situation I would be facing.
Just remind us of the timeline there, just to give people an idea of how swiftly it was dealt with in the UK.
So essentially, I think it was the end of February, I think, I got the initial letter, or early March, around that time. And then I had the smear test. They wanted me to come in the next day, but I was working, so I came in the Monday morning, had the smear, got the results back in a couple of weeks, maybe 2 weeks, was booked in for a colposcopy, and then they booked me in for surgery a couple of weeks later. So all between March to now, so 3 or 4 months, they flew me through. So even when they knew that I had the diagnosis, I had to come in for a pre-op before surgery, and she said, can you come in Monday morning? And I said, I'm actually not here, I'm at home in Ireland. And she said, okay, when are you back? And I said, Tuesday. And she said, right, Tuesday morning, come in at 9 o'clock. So she said, you're a priority, we need to get this sorted.
Okay. And they've been at pains to point out to you that you were very lucky in that they caught it early.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it can be quite easy to kind of put it off for a bit. You know, it is only kind of offered to us from this age onwards, and I only turned 25 in June, the middle of June. So, you know, I could very easily just kind of say, oh, I must book that in now, you know, and 3 or 4 months down the line, we don't know, you know, how quickly these things can spread.
And of course, women of your age just missed the HPV vaccine by what, a year?
Yeah, as far as I know, I was trying to figure out literally before.
No, we've looked it up. It looks like you've missed it by a year, because when they introduced it in 2010, they did a catch-up system as well.
Yeah.
For all secondary school girls. And you would have just left secondary school at that stage.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Because I was talking about it on Twitter there a couple of months beforehand, around the time that Laura Brennan was campaigning. And a few girls that would have been in the same year as me in school had paid privately to get it done. And that just wouldn't have been an option for my family, I think. So, yeah, I had just missed the window. So I think that as well kind of made it a bit more prominent in my mind that I wanted to get checked.
Yeah. And Laura was from your neck of the woods. Did you know her?
I didn't actually know her personally, no, but we did have a lot of mutual friends. So I think, you know, seeing so many people that I knew heartbroken because of her, and her obviously being, you know, a few months between us, I think it really kind of hit home for me. And, you know, I do thank her for highlighting it so much, because it really did make me more aware.
And do you go through in your head, like, what if I was just a little bit younger, I would have got the vaccine and you wouldn't be sitting here in the Limerick studio talking to me now?
Well, the thing is, I had said to the nurses that I didn't get the HPV when I was in for the colposcopy. Mm. And they said, well, you know, that's not to say this situation would be any different. She said the HPV only protects against some forms.
Most forms. Yeah. Most forms.
But she
yes.
said there's no guarantee.
No.
So she said you can't beat yourself up about the fact that you haven't got it.
Yeah, well, it wasn't your fault either that you didn't get it.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was €500 or something like that to get it done at
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, it was well, Mary Harney, who was Minister for the Health at the time, was quoting €600. And then I know there was a private clinic in Smithfield in Dublin at the time. They were offering it for €300.
Okay.
So, and then probably other ones around the country might have been more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a difficult time, Jennifer, waiting now? You know, because you've had times where, you know, you thought you were very healthy and it turned out you weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said earlier on there, you're in limbo now. Is
yeah.
it something that's weighing heavy on your mind?
Absolutely. I mean, it's quite difficult. I try my hardest just to not think about it and hope that, you know, it'll all be fine. But, you know, you lie in bed at night and you kind of think, well, what if it's not? You know, and what if this isn't the end of it? You know, I could get the all clear tomorrow and then 6 months' time it could, you know, be a different circumstance. So, yeah, it is difficult, but...
You say at the end of your article that the women of Ireland deserve better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I suppose your message is a very strong one to the government of Ireland, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I can only really go off what I've seen and what I've read. And I think, you know, every week there seems to be something else, you know, another mess up and another error and another apology. And I don't think it's fair that women are dying because of failures. And, you know, people are kind of asking me, am I going to become this campaigner and this, that and the other? And, you know, there are fantastic people out there campaigning to change this system. And unfortunately, you know, we have lost lives and we families shouldn't be ripped apart because of this. I would like to see that, you know, the government take on the recommendations from these reports that have been done, and that a change does happen, hopefully.
Mm. I suppose you have a unique, well, not unique, other Irish women will be the same, in, you know, women who live in the UK, they've seen how it works and works well in the UK. And then because you're in journalism, you've seen and followed the stories, mm-hmm. how it doesn't work well here. So you're in a very good position to comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when do you think you'll get the all clear? When do you get information?
Well, I was talking to them last week and they said it'll be a couple of days and the doctor will need to sign off on it. So please God, this week we'll be hoping for some good news. But I don't think I'll believe it until I see it in black and white in front of me. So we'll see what happens. Please God, I'll be all right.
And how did your family react to all this?
Shocked, kind of obviously heartbroken. People keep asking me, you know, how my parents are doing, but... You know, I can't really say how they're doing because they're not going to be honest with me and tell me how they really feel. You know, everyone's putting on a brave face to each other. You know, I'm reassuring them and they're reassuring me. So, you know, it is tough. It's, you know, one of those things where no one wants to say the word around the house and this kind of thing. But I came home now yesterday and it was their first time seeing me. So they're delighted to have me back for a few days.
Hugs and tears.
Yeah. Pajamas and all my favourite food waiting for me at home. So I'm well looked after.
Yeah. So you're not sort of, you know, taking the mickey, or you're not sort of acting like the sick young girl again, are you? Is that what you're doing?
Well, a little bit. No, they're all doting on me anyway, so I'll take it while I can for a couple of days and relax at home.
And when are you going back to London?
I'll be going back Friday. Well, right. Hopefully Friday. We'll see how we go with the strikes.
And how are things going over there with the journalism side of things?
Well, I'm out of work at the minute, so I'm probably better off, to be honest, because at least I have a few weeks to kind of rest and heal. But I'm on the hunt now for jobs, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully something will come of that.
Anne-Marie has been on 5 on 5 of 1. Dublin girl living in Scotland for 18 years. I've been very unwell over the last couple of weeks, thankfully recovering now. The NHS is absolutely amazing. The care and diligence and speed with which they treated me was outstanding, and not a penny changed hands. Thanking God for the blessings of the system. Wishing your guest every best wish for the future, as we do. So, Jennifer, keep in touch. And our thoughts are with you, and enjoy your stay at home in Limerick.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for taking the call.
Brilliant, thanks.
Bye now, bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
1-5-1-5-5-1-Ray@RTE.ie. Gwen from the Irish Kidney Association has been on to tell us that the Irish are doing particularly well in the transplant games. There's a 38 strong Irish team ranging in age from 16 to 81, and they've won a total of 4 gold, 5 silver and 2 bronze medals. And they'll continue to compete in various sporting events this afternoon throughout the week before returning home to Dublin Airport on Saturday, 24th of August, which is our anniversary, our wedding anniversary, just remind me. Deirdre Fall earlier today won a silver medal in the 200-metre freestyle swimming event, following up with a gold in the 100-metre breaststroke, which is all brilliant. And the mother of two from Dalkey also won a medal in the squash as well over the last few days. So she's doing particularly well. So we wish all the participants in the transplant games from Ireland the very best luck over the next few days. And we must remind you on Friday that they'll be returning to Dublin Airport on Saturday, 21st of August. A good holiday can be prolonged by recreating the best of food tasted and washing it down with one of the good wines, moisturising the tan, keeping up the reading habit formed on holidays. Speaking of reading, I didn't do a lot of reading this holiday for some reason. I don't know. I had a book, and it's on artificial intelligence, and it was one of those books which I felt obliged to read, but it was a bit turgid. And anyway, I'm working my way through it, and I'll let you know what I think when I finish it off. I'm about halfway through, but it's a thing that we all have to talk about, because they're the people in the know are saying that in the future the world may be taken over by machines. Artificial intelligent, super intelligent machines that'll take over the world. That's what they're predicting. And it could be in a very young person's lifetime, as in the next 100 years or so. Anyway, on books, audiobooks are just as good as reading. And there are people who are sort of elitist, sort of book reading people who say, oh no, it's not the same. You have to read. The experience of listening to a book isn't the same at all. It doesn't use your brain as much as anyway. They've done research on this, and neuroscientists have discovered that the same cognitive and emotional parts of the brain are stimulated whether a person hears words or reads them. So there you go. So if you're feeling half guilty about listening to a book as opposed to reading a book, you've got confirmation from neuroscientists that it's exactly the same experience for your brain, in that if, when reading a book, you feel emotional about something that you read, well, if you hear it, you feel emotion as well. If in a book you're learning something when you're reading it, same happens when you hear it. So that's good news for people who travel long distances and listen to audiobooks, and people who don't like the exercise of reading a book but like the exercise of listening to a book. So that's all good, isn't it? Now, 51551, ray@rte.ie. Dublin Bus want more women driving buses. Yes, and they have a campaign. And they're inviting women and men to come up for open days over the next few weeks. In studio with me, we have Jennifer Dixon, who is a female bus driver.
Good afternoon, Jennifer.
And we have Rosary Smith, who is a female rally car driver.
Ray, just before we start, let me just say something.
Okay.
She's a bus driver.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm a driver. I'm a rally driver. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female. No, this is all a, you
okay,
know.
Okay, okay. Yeah, no,
sorry, okay.
No.
Carry on.
No, what I will say to you, though, Rosemary, is that Dublin Bus are looking for more women.
They are. There's only 4% of the drivers are women.
Yeah, I was looking at the stats.
Yeah.
So there are 2,550 drivers in Dublin Bus, and only 97 are female. And that's, as you say, if you do the maths on it, 4%.
Yeah.
So they need more. The first lady, do you know what year the first female bus driver?
I wouldn't have it. Oh, a lovely girl we met this morning, and she's been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah.
And she said she absolutely loves it. She doesn't want to do anything else. More power to her. I think that's brilliant.
Well, I watched a lady called Joan, can't remember her surname, been interviewed by the late Derek Davis because she was the very first female Dublin bus driver.
When was that?
1980.
She actually only retired earlier on this year.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she did. She went to control a job. I can't remember. She was at International Women's Day with me last year.
Was she? Yeah.
Yeah, and she went this year, then she retired. And she went on. She was actually in central control, controlling the buses by the end of it. Yeah.
And it was a brilliant piece, Rosemary and Jennifer, because they had no uniform for her. So she had to take the uniform home, and the word she used was she had to renovate it.
Yes.
She had to take the trousers apart and reassemble them, and she had to change the buttons from one side to the other. So there you go.
There you go.
That was 1980. So so you are one of 97.
Yes, one of 97.
So Rosemary, we'll find out a little about Jennifer first.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
and then we'll talk
by
to
all
you.
Means,
okay,
yeah.
So how long are you bus driving?
I am bus driving 3 years with Dublin Bus. I drove a minibus before that.
Okay.
I was also a transport manager before that as well.
And why did you choose a career as a bus driver?
Well, I looked into, obviously, I was aging on a bit. I wanted to get a mortgage, settle down. So I wanted to get somewhere I could have a career. I never went to college. I was never one for school or anything. So when I left school, I went straight working. And I obviously wanted to work my way up. So I realised Dublin Bus, there's no cap. You can keep going the whole way up unless you... Well, you're obviously not going to get the CEO's job, but you know, work
you
your way
know,
up.
You never know.
You never know. But you're going to work your way up. So I decided then, no, I'm going to go into Dublin Bus. I love driving. I wanted something different from being in the office. I was in the office for 7 years before that, and it was just, I had it in me to go to driving, so I went driving the bus. Yeah.
She's aging on. Do you know what age she is? She's 29
before
the thing.
She must
29.
Be. Well, she looks it, to be honest. Yeah, she does.
Yeah, so 3 years. And was there any talk, you know, because you're married.
Yes.
Was there any talk about it being a male-dominated job?
Yes, it did cross my mind being a male-dominated job. I was in the private bus before that, and that was a male-dominated environment. There was only 2 females in the whole company. There was only 50 of us, but there was only 2 females. So I was kind of used to working in the male-dominated environment. And it was never something... The guys in the job now make you feel as welcome. They are so used to it. Do you know what I mean? The passengers, some of them are a bit like... Oh wow, it's a woman driver. They still get excited to just say,
they do.
You still, like when I started off training in the beginning, I had a woman at a traffic lights one day clapping her hands as I drove past, which is real. But you still get it on the back, a tap on your shoulder saying, I love a woman driver. I really do love a woman driver. You know, you get that little sense.
And do you think the relationship between the driver and the passengers is different because you're a woman?
Some, yes. The older generation, yes. The younger generation, no.
Okay.
Because they're so more diverse. I think they realise that, you know, women and men do everything. Like, for instance, I was telling Carol earlier on that last week I was driving out of Port Tunnel in a double-decker bus and there was a woman driving an Arctic and I was like, wow, look at her. And then I realised, no, I'm driving a bus as well. Like, you know what I mean? So you still kind of do look back and say, wow.
Yeah. And are the older generation a little bit suspicious?
No.
No,
they're more like, fair play to you. We love a woman driver. They're more encouraging and, you know, acknowledge that you're a woman driver.
And what sort of driver are you? Would you be lenient with people who wouldn't have the correct change? Who probably...
Yes, I am lenient.
Are you?
Don't let anyone hear that. Yes, I am. I'm fair. I don't like to bring trouble. I don't like anything. I don't like confrontation. Happy bus. That's what I like.
Yeah. What route do you do so people
so
know?
So we do many of them. I do, like, I'm based in Summerhill Garage, so we do the Airlinks, the 16s, the 41s, the 120s, and also the 33s out of Albergen.
And things have changed since 1980, so there is a female version of the uniform, is there?
There is a female version of the uniform now. It's harder to get and it's longer to get, but there is a female version of the uniform. Yes, yeah. There is.
Have you ever driven a bus, Rosemary Smith?
No. But I am going to on Saturday.
Are you?
Oh, yes, I'm going out to their place in Phippsborough.
In Phippsborough, yeah.
And I'm going to try it. Should try anything once, Ray.
Yeah.
Why not?
It's obviously power assisted.
It's automatic. It's an automatic.
Automatic and power assist.
Yeah, it's really easy to drive a bus.
The size of it really is a bit off-putting.
Well, that's what you say, but like, people have this in their head. Like my friends and my own family say, how do you drive a bus? It's so easy. It's actually easier to drive a bus sometimes than it is to drive a car because it's automatic. And the training you get is next to none. So don't be afraid of it. Just come along and do it.
How many passengers can a double-decker bus hold?
97.
Right. You see, you're responsible for 97 people.
That's another thing as well. But you know what? Say if you put people in your car, wouldn't you, and drive the car, no problem. So what's an extra few? More?
Yeah, four maximum. Not 97. Not 97.
I know, but like, you know, it is. It's the training you get. Like, okay, I was a bit nervous at first myself when I went in thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be driving this big and there's going to be people over me. But when you get used to it, like, just realise there's low bridges.
Now, are you going to, when you get into the bus on Saturday, Rosary Smith, are you going to open it up? Is that the expression you use? Are you going to put your
foot to the floor.
Foot to the floor.
Oh, absolutely.
What's the maximum speed they can do?
67.
67? Yeah. Is that kilometres or miles?
Yeah. Kilometres.
Kilometres, all right.
We're restricted because we're city drivers.
That's 8 into 60. Yeah. That's about what? 40 miles an hour. Yeah, that doesn't interest me.
Good enough speed. We have 97 people on.
No, when you're going out to the airport then. And then you get onto the motorway. So
yeah, and it's 80. What?
80.
It's 80 on the motorway, but we can only do 67.
67 is the top limit.
When you pass a bus on the M50, you can always overtake. Do you ever notice that they're always because they're limited.
They're limited. So even if you put your foot right down.
Yeah, no, I won't go
any further. Won't go any further. No.
Yeah, you can cancel Saturday now, Rosemary, if you're not interested. What's the top speed you've done in your lifetime?
Oh, about 196 miles an hour.
Wow.
What does that feel like?
Well, that was when we did the land speed record down in Cork. But what I didn't realise was it was ridged, tarred road. And my helmet was slightly too big. Right. So when I took off, and then the helmet came down further and further. I'm sat on top of my nose. With one hand, I'm trying to push the helmet up. The other hand, I'm trying to steer the thing. I mean, it was just hilarious. But the Formula One I drove there 2 years ago. Remember, I told you.
Yes.
And
at 79, you drove a Formula One car.
Yeah.
Yes. I was just letting people know, Rosemary.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, no, Roy, the thing is that I'm so used to driving now. I'm not saying I can manage a bus, but I'll certainly give it a go.
Mm. If you have to drive a race car, you're well able to drive a bus.
Well, we'll see, it's just the size of it. The only other thing I did was I was asked to do a thing from London up to Norway and then back down and back into Monte Carlo. But I had a caravan towed on behind.
Right.
And I never towed a caravan before that.
That's a difficult thing, isn't it? Yeah.
And it started, and it was so funny, because the Lord or the Mayor of London was flagging us off from just outside Bond Street somewhere. And here's this, and it was a great big caravan. I mean, it was really a big caravan. And anyway, we started up. And I said, I'll never even get around Hyde Park Corner. You know, that's what I felt. So, I mean, I don't know what a bus would feel like. And we started up. But it's funny, you get used to it so quickly. But when we got across onto the continent and so on, of course, they're driving on the right-hand side of the road. And, you know, you're trying to make more straight lines out of the corners so that... But by the time we got down to Monte Carlo, first of all, everything in the caravan was smashed up because we ended up by going so quickly. It was bashing from side to side. Every corner of the caravan was bent. But it was good publicity and the company loved it.
Now, you were a trailblazer in that when you were rally driving, like there were very, very few women and you made a name for yourself. You were the only woman ever to win the Tulip.
Tulip Rally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that still stands.
Holland, yeah. No, there were a few. Pat Moss won.
Okay.
You know,
right. But you were the first woman to win?
No. Moss did.
Right.
I know she won Liège, Rome, Liège or something. But, you know, it was just different. And I'm awfully glad to hear what you say about the men treating you and your, you know, so on. No, I was treated as a total, complete, you know, nitwit. And, I mean, they all sort of said, oh, well, Norman Garrett, who was the competition manager, and his cars weren't winning anything. They had three men's teams and then the women's team. But, I mean, Norman, and I said it going way back, the only reason he took me on was that I had been modelling here and I had this long blonde hair and I used to stick the eyelashes on. They always think I stick the fingernails on, which I don't. They grow there.
Are they real?
Yeah, of course I'm real. Right, everything about me now is real. Come on. Anyway, but he only did it because he thought, well, the cars can't win, so she might as well sit on the bonnet and trail her legs over and get some publicity.
Right.
So he was clever in that way, but then I started to win, and then some of the men started looking at me in a different light. But, I mean, there were so few women, especially in the continental, you know, Monte Carlo rallies and Alpine rallies and these things, there were so few women.
Was it an advantage that they underestimated your ability? Did you use that to your advantage?
No. I didn't. I just enjoyed doing it, like you enjoy driving your buses.
Yeah.
And no, I just enjoyed every moment of it because I felt, now this sounds a funny word to use, I felt safe once I got into the car and shut the door and strapped myself in.
I know the feeling, actually. Yeah.
I was in my own little world, which I really enjoy.
I do sometimes drive along in my own car and go, the size of that bus. Once I get into the cab, it doesn't actually feel like I'm driving a bus that size. I'm like, I just drive it normally. Like, it's like my workplace, I'm comfortable in it, I'm happy in it. And
yeah, but listen, what about if you're turning off, say, Westmoreland Street, and you're turning down the side of the Quays?
Yes. You probably seen me doing it yesterday, did you?
No.
That was your intention, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
No, but just taking, for instance, how do you get that you can get the whole of the bus there to go that way?
When you're driving a tight corner, yeah.
Like you don't run over the footpath.
When you're driving a bigger vehicle, you have to always take it wider. So you always stick your nose out and bring it around. You keep an eye on your mirror.
Do you have sort of all the wheels turn or just...
All the wheels turn together. One.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't...
What does that mean?
Our cars, you'd only get the front wheels.
Right.
So when the bus follows you, basically. So you have to get that in your head that the bus follows you. So everywhere you turn, the bus will follow.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
And does the back of it go out then? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so you have to keep an eye on your... That's why we're always like... You have to be mirror conscious because you're always keeping an eye on your left-hand mirror, obviously, for cyclists that can come up your inside, and also the curb if you're turning left.
Yeah.
Or also then, you know, with the back of the swing out, if there's a car, sometimes we have to stop at lights. You see us stopping at lights, say turn onto George Street, because if our car is going to hit the back of another car, the back of the tail
yes,
swing
yeah.
is going to hit out and hit another car, and then you'd be in trouble. You know?
Have you had any accidents?
No. Touch wood, Ray, don't jinx it, please.
I was waiting for him to ask that.
Have you had any accidents?
Oh, loads.
Loads, yeah.
Not on the road. I mean, just on events.
Yeah,
oh, well,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I've broken a mirror, but like...
That's not, but that's...
You took it too close to
something. The pole came out to meet me, so that was, yeah.
The pole's fault.
Yeah, it was the pole's fault, yeah.
So what was your biggest accident, your most serious accident?
Well, you see, the thing is, when I'm driving and I've got all the roll cage and the harness and all the rest of it, I normally didn't ever get hurt in any way. But it's the co-driver.
Oh, God, yes.
And I say, well, too bad. Well,
yeah.
Oh, no. When I came to competition, I was quite ruthless. I said, I'm doing it because I want to do it and I want to win. I was as bad as that. But then when I'd get out of the car at the end of a big event and we would have won, then my co-driver, I'd be saying, you go on up, you go on and collect the trophy. I couldn't. I was so shy. It was, people now think that's a load of rubbish, but people who knew me back then...
Very shy.
I couldn't put a word together now. That's the truth of it.
That's hard to believe. Isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. No, because I had a mother who was rather sort of... you know, we'd go somewhere and she'd say, this is my daughter. You know, she drives rally cars. And I'd cringe. And it's well she's not around when I'm driving a bus on Saturday.
Can I go along to watch
this? Yes, you can.
Right, okay.
You're welcome along. Yeah.
And not only me is welcome, but like anybody who is interested in becoming a bus
driver.
Yeah,
they have to just register at the moment with dublinbus.ie.
And they have to have a driving licence for a car.
And a full for Saturday.
But.
And they're having two more in September and two more in October.
And it is, excuse the pun, a drive to get more...
Women drivers.
Yes.
Because we only have 97 women at the moment. Yeah. And we want to double that.
Right.
I know it is a recruitment drive for men and women, but Saturday is just women focused because we need to try it up. The fear out of women.
You
saying
were in
they can't
an all female class.
No.
Were you? No.
Yeah, I was. Sorry. In 2016, yes. I was part of the last recruitment drive of five women drivers that came through.
Okay, there's only five, right?
Five.
And
only five in my class. There's other class like behind us. Then there are two girls come in, and there are three come in the week after that. Do you know what I mean?
And have all of them stayed on?
We've all stayed on, yeah.
Right.
We all love it.
What does your hubby do, do you mind me asking?
Well, he used to be a bus driver, now he's a barman.
All right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So
and did you meet him through the bus driving?
No.
No.
We met outside of that, yeah. But no, he did bus driving. He was actually bus driving when I started in Dublin Bus. And I used to come home and, like, you know, we'd be having the banter, you know, like, my bus is bigger than yours and that and that. And I'd be, you don't drive through the city, I do. And, you know, to be like that, you know. Yeah. But now he's left that trade behind. He's gone back to the bar work. But yeah. No. Yeah.
And why did he leave it?
We were getting the mortgage and all the rest, so it was the only avenue for him.
Yeah. And where, like, because it is tough. Like, you obviously, I can't imagine you're buying a house in Dublin, are you?
I bought a house in Mead.
In Mead, yes.
Yes. And it was great getting, because, you know, when we walked in, I was telling Carol earlier, when we walked into the banks, and I said, I work for Dublin Bus, and he went, it's going to be no problem getting a mortgage if you work for Dublin Bus. And I swear to God, in 3 days, we had mortgage approval.
Why is that?
Because you're in a stable job. Right. Stability, yeah. Everyone's going to need a bus. You work for a state company.
Yes.
There you go. So it was a stable job. Yeah.
And was that part of the attraction for you?
Yeah, one of the attractions. Then, obviously, I never went to college. I went straight into working because I wasn't, obviously, the studious type. So I went straight in. I went straight working, and I wanted to work my way up. You know, so I'm not. I can always work my way up in the company. That's the way I look at it. It's loads of careers. There's loads of alternatives. You can go into office work. You can go into training. You can go into anything.
Yeah. Are you still running the driving school?
I am. Yeah. Not for buses, just for cars. No, I just don't like to see youngsters, the minute they get the learner's permit, being thrown out on the roads the way they are. I'd like some bit of training, and I do it down in Goffs on the Naas Road. But they they come from the schools. They could come 24 or 30. They're in transition year. And that's, you know, it's just something in transition here. But the extraordinary thing that I find about it is 20 years ago, they'd come in and Miss Smith and been very nice and so on. And then the next thing was Rosemary and still a bit. And now it's, hi, Rosie, how are things going? And it just shows you the way people have changed.
Yes.
The whole of the world has changed. But I just want to ask you one question. Sorry, Ray.
No, you go
you
ahead.
You don't mind me taking...
Not at all. No, you take over. Go ahead.
What happens when you're coming along and you get a group of maybe Spanish students or something, and they all have things plugged in their ears and the heads down going like this, and they walk straight out in front of your bus?
You're always judging, this is what I was thinking yesterday, you're always judging people. So you're driving along, you're looking, you're saying, what's that psychic going to do? Oh, he's swerving, he's going to pull out in front of me. You're not just judging what's in your bus, you're reading the road ahead.
Yeah.
You're always, and you're saying, oh, this car's a bit over, he's going to try and get in here. So you just slow down.
Because if you have a cyclist, because I cycle in town, if you have a cyclist on your inside and you're turning left and he or she's going straight ahead.
I just stop and let him pass. And they know, I just slow down, let them pass up your inside, let them get rid of them, get them out of your sight.
Yeah. No, I don't think I'd be a bus driver, definitely, because I would.
You need to.
I would definitely say, hump you. And I'd be gone around the corner.
No, we have to be, we're out there representing the company, so you have to be out there on a safe note. Yeah.
Would you like to race a bus? Well, that'd be a good crack, wouldn't it? Racing in a.
No, thank you,
bus.
Ray. No more ideas.
Have to get seatbelts fit first. Well, don't have to get seatbelts.
I'll arrange in Mondello.
Good, you do that.
Who would you like to race?
I'm racing, you're okay.
Yeah, you can come and
race. No, on a serious note, over the years, what are the bad habits that people have now driving?
They're dreadful now.
Are they?
Oh, driving is getting worse and worse and worse. It really is. And, you know, red lights, what are red lights for?
Stopping.
But they don't.
They go fast.
One, two, three, and they've gone through the red lights. They don't know what yellow boxes are for. Oh, they're pretty. Let's sit in the middle and have a look at them. Mm. They don't know what ghost islands are. They don't use their indicators. They don't look in the mirrors. They travel on the overtaking lane on the Naas dual carriageway. And you could be there flashing and everything.
Because it is an overtaking lane. You overtake and then you return to the other lane.
Meant to.
Yes.
But they don't.
And in a three-lane system, what are the rules?
Well, there's
the
very inside lane.
Yes.
See, trucks really should go on the inside lane and the middle lane, but they don't. And some of the buses, I'm not saying they're your buses, I'm not saying they're Dublin bus. Got to be very careful now. No, but some of them, when they're on the long distance, you know, down to Cork or whatever it is, but they can get into the overtaking lane and they will sit there. No, I mean, the speed limit is 100k, and then when you get on the motorway, it's 120. But they can be sitting there and they are flying along. Yeah. I mean, they really are flying along. So,
and you see bad habits as well, obviously.
A lot of bad habits, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to get bad habits as well, but you just need to be conscious of them and realise.
No, but I mean, you from your vantage point, you can see what.
Oh yes,
you can see what motorists are doing.
Yes,
yeah.
Like yesterday, like driving in between a bus lane and a normal lane up the quays. Do you know what I mean? And I'm trying to like flash and say, move it,
move.
Then you're going to like, you know, move over because I can't get past.
So
you.
They're straddling it.
Straddling, yeah. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then they're like kind of straddling, saying, "If do I want to go left? Will it be quicker if I go left?" And they're kind of coming in now. So you just need to hold back because you know. If you go up in his inside and he doesn't see you, he's going to put it over. And
then, of course, there's so many distractions in a car now. You know, like mobile phones.
Oh, you just see it all the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Or kids fighting in the back of the car. Like, I'd pull up a traffic light and see it. And then, you know, the parents are leaning into the back. And all of a sudden, then the handbrake's on, the car starts rolling. You just see everything. Like, there is so
many. You don't have to wear a safety belt, do you? No.
We don't. We're exempt.
Right. Okay.
I don't know how.
But, you know, there's one thing that I wish, and I said it to Maya Murdoch, she's the head of the RSA, is, you know, you can't hold a phone in your hand and you can't do this and you can't do that.
Well, they're the rules. People still do it.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. Yeah. But one they haven't brought in to existence, which I think is much worse, you see them and they've got steaming hot cups of coffee and they're turning, their heads are going back and back and back and back to get the liquid out. What happens if the lid falls off that and then it's all down the front and then, ooh, not nice.
Yeah.
But why isn't that banned?
The other thing which is coming down the tracks is, and it's in my car, you have this AirPlay thing. So you have the equivalent of your phone screen on a screen in front of you, which is a terrible distraction.
That's the worst distraction.
Yeah, and you can put Spotify on and then you're changing a playlist and then suddenly you're...
Like I seen a car last week when I was sitting in traffic and it was like they had like an iPad on a screen in front of them. Yes. Absolutely everything. And I was like looking in going, my God.
Redoubling bus, is there flexibility around working hours, part-time shifts, etc.? A good way to get women would be to focus on how it could work for mothers. Do you know that? Or
it could work for mothers. They're very accommodating and it could.
And you work shifts?
I work shifts at the moment, yes. So I work an early week and a late week.
Right. And what's the early one?
You'd be up at 3 or 4 a.m. It could be anything up to 6 or 7 in the morning. And then, but if you're up that early, you're obviously finished early. So you're home. Like last week, I was home by 9:30 most mornings.
You know? Right.
So you're home. Then you have your whole day to clean your house and do your shopping.
And go to bed. Go back to bed.
And go back to bed.
And the late shift is what?
The late shift can range from like starting from 2 in the evening, so maybe 6 in the evening, and then to the last bus, maybe 11:30.
Can you find out where and when the open day is? It's dublinbus.ie. Have all the details, David. And I hate the new buses with the middle doors to get off. I want to thank the driver on my way off. How many people do that? I saw that recently.
Many people do that.
Because as a country, we're unique in that we thank the bus driver.
Yeah, we do. And you know what? Like yesterday, I was at the airport and I was standing there saying, thank you. And I was saying, thank you. And my hair was. And I think I went into one. I had to stop to catch my breath because it's great culture.
Isn't it? It's lovely.
I love it. It makes you feel appreciated.
Yeah. Lovely dear Rosemary. She inspired me to drive years ago and I really love it. She was even willing to do a transition year course for daughter's school in the 90s, but most of the kids were farmers, offspring, and didn't go for it. Love seeing the women bus drivers and I did clap when I first saw her. And the farmers' kids obviously learned the same way as you learned how to drive.
In a field.
In a field.
Basically, And they all drove tractors anyway. So, you know, they had some sort of inkling about it. But
It would be great to see Rosemary at Mundella Park on Sunday. A bus should be no problem to her, says Terry Webb. And years ago, we got up in the middle of the night to see Circuit of Ireland Rally, Paddy Hopkirk in a Mini Cooper, followed by Rosemary Smith in a Hillman Imp, with power lights appeared and disappeared in a flash. Powerful lights appeared and disappeared in a flash. The original yellow streak, that's John McGovern in Dundrum. Dublinbus.ie, Saturday's full, you're telling
us.
You're going to be there.
I'm going to be there.
I might get along, bring the kids. and if not, we'll see you again. Jennifer, thanks so much
thank
for coming in.
Thank
you. Rosemary, as always, it's a real pleasure to be in your company. Okay, we'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Just before we go, a huge thanks to Jennifer. She's encouraged me to go and check the open day out. And Francie says a good way of extending your holidays is to stay wearing shorts for as long as possible into September. They won't let me do it in here, Francie. I would if I could, but I can't. That's it from us. Mary Wilson's on the way. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.